Today we have distinguished Albanian translator John Hodgson with us. He is talking about his international Booker longlisted rendition of A Dictator Calls, a novel written by Albanian writer Ismail Kadre. The author and translator were previously longlisted for the novel The Traitor's Niche for the Man Booker International Prize in 2017-2. So far, John Hodgson has translated 7 novels by Ismail Kadre. John Hodgson's origins are in Tyneside. He studied English at the universities of Cambridge and Newcastle. In 1980, the British Council sent him to teach English at the University of Kosovo in Pristina, where he learned Albanian mainly from his students. After the fall of communism in Albania in 1991, he went to Tirana and lived there for 5 years. Following the Balkan Wars, he worked as a translator and interpreter for the United Nations Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia at The Hague, interpreting at the trial of Slobodan Milosevic. He translated 3 books by Fatos Slobonia. Most recently, Like a Prisoner, a collection of short stories describing the life in Enver Hoxha's labor camps. He has written in Albanian, a memoir of Kosovo in the 1980s, published in Pristina in 2022. You can buy the book A Dictator Calls using the link given in the show notes. Please give us feedback on this episode using the Spotify app. Good morning, John. Welcome to Harshaniyam. It's a real honor to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
John, you're a British citizen and graduated from Cambridge. How did you come into contact with the Albanian language?
Well, you're right. I studied at Cambridge and I had what I would call a very sheltered and privileged upbringing. And I became restless. I wanted to do something different with my life. And I was very interested in Eastern Europe at this time. This was in the time of the 1970s, 1980s. In fact, it was the time of the Cold War when Europe was divided. And Eastern Europe was mysterious and unknown to us. And we knew these countries mainly through music or maybe a little bit of their literature, but we were deeply ignorant of this other half of Europe. And I was fascinated by it. And first I went to what was then known as East Germany and taught English there.
So you were allowed to move freely between East Germany and UK those times?
Well, this was a university exchange, mm-hmm. which was an unusual thing at the time. And I was given a year's visa in the GDR, as it was known. And this was a very unusual thing to do, and I found it enthralling. I wasn't attracted in any way to communism as an ideology, but this way of life was to me, it was a very strange and interesting society. And so the British Council, applied for a job in the Soviet Union. And they said, well, we're full up in the Soviet Union. Would you go to Yugoslavia? And I thought, well, all right, yes, I didn't have a job at the time. I thought, I'll go to Yugoslavia. And they sent me to Kosovo, which at that time was a province of Yugoslavia. Now it's an independent state. But at that time, it was a province, and the population, the majority of the population, was Albanian. So I found myself in this very interesting to me society that was quite different from anything I'd known in my very conventional upbringing. And I loved it. I stayed there 5 years and I had a wonderful time.
How was it different from UK in that sense, culturally?
Culturally, well, it was, first of all, at that time, it was largely an agricultural society. It was mainly subsistence farmers, and there was a great thirst for education. I had had my education given to me on a plate, but these people who did not have much in the way of educational facilities, they were very thirsty for education of all kinds. And I taught a bit of English, which at that time was for them a very foreign language, because this, of course, was before the internet and before the influence of global English was really felt. And this to them was their window on the world, and they to me were my window on the world.
You were teaching English literature at the university, and then how did you get into the translation, John? How did you get into literary translation?
Well, I had studied literature, so my background was in literature, and in Kosovo I met with writers, and I learned from them. When I learned enough Albanian, I read their books, and this seemed to be the natural thing to do, to try to translate. And that is what I did. And I wasn't very successful at the beginning, but I kept going, and that is what I came to do.
Okay, how did you get your first book published? Tell us the story behind it.
Well, it was a slow start, and there were sort of half publications, and there was a little book of poetry that was published in Kosovo, and there were some translations in magazines. So it was a very slow start. And I think I'd say that at that time, the whole climate in the publishing world regarding translation was entirely different. Now we have a much more diversity in publishing, and there is more interest in translations. At that time, if you were to send an Albanian novel to a publisher, they would be inclined to laugh. But this attitude has now, of course, gone. And I was very inexperienced in the publishing world and really didn't know how to go about it. So it was a slow and hesitant start. Also, there is much more support for translators these days. There are courses in translation. There are groups of translators. There is mentoring for young translators, which I never had. So it's a much more favorable climate now.
Okay. How about the writers and the reader community at that time?
Well, what was interesting, particularly interesting at that time, is that it was a very small literary community, as it is still. That if you read somebody's book, you could meet them in the cafe the next day. So all the writers knew each other, it was there was a sense of community, which was quite different from the huge literary community of London.
Which is the first book that you got published? Your translation, I mean.
The first book that that was published here in London was Ismail Kadri is the Three Arched Bridge, which was quite a long time ago now.
So at that time you were in Albania, or you moved out of Albania by that time?
At that time I had moved away from Kosovo. I had spent some time working as a translator, a non-literary translator, because I've done, besides these books I've done, I've also done some fairly strange stuff. The first job I had as was monitoring the Albanian radio and press. So I would translate communist propaganda.
You said monitoring.
That's right.
Okay, please go ahead. Yeah.
I would translate speeches by the political leaders of Albania. Uh-huh. This was still in communist times. And I would translate things from the newspapers, the radio, which was sort of quite obsessive. I came to analyze what was going on in this closed society of Albania, as it was at the time.
So you were working for which government then?
I was working for the US government at the time.
Wow, that's very interesting. Okay. Now, one of the other roles that you had, even now I think you are an interpreter too. You work for International Criminal Tribune for ICTY. Give me a bit of background of ICTY and also your reflection as an observer.
Right, yes, because as an interpreter you are... an observer, in a way you don't, your role is quite limited and precise. But the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was set up by the United Nations as an attempt to bring to justice those who were responsible for crimes against humanity and war crimes in the wars that followed the collapse of Yugoslavia. And if you ask us what we can learn from the collapse of Yugoslavia, I would say that Yugoslavia collapsed because, first of all, of nationalism, and also the weakness of democratic institutions. And I think that is the historical lesson of Yugoslavia. Whether it will be absorbed, I don't know, because we have plenty of nationalism and plenty of weak democratic institutions in the world today.
All across the world. I don't think we have learned anything.
That's what it seems to me sometimes.
You are a writer too, right? You wrote books.
I've written one, and quite recently, and now that having translated quite a lot, I have had the itch to write myself. So I wrote a short book in Albanian.
Oh, that's interesting. Not in English.
Not in English. This was a memoir of my time in Kosovo in the 80s. And this was published in Pristina, the capital of Kosovo, last year.
What is it about?
It's about my recollections of Kosovo in the 1980s. It's a memoir, but it's not just about myself. It's about the society of the time, and also it's political developments, because at that time it was the beginning of this collapse of Yugoslavia, and there were a lot of dramatic things going on.
Yeah. See, when you compare act of writing and act of translation, Do you see any similarity in the way that you mentally process?
No. and I find that I am used to being told what to write. So I find this freedom to sit in front of an empty page and write what I want. I find this a little bit scary.
But as far as the creative part of is concerned, how similar is writing and translation?
Well, they're similar in the sense that both a writer and a translator will play with words and move them around in the same way. But I mean, translation is a creative art, but I think it's a big mistake for a translator to identify so closely with a book that they consider it their own, because it's not your book.
So, can you describe a situation where you felt a translated text seriously enhanced the original?
No, I think this is quite dangerous territory. And I noticed that whenever there's a sentence that I translate, which I'm particularly proud of and I think is really good, I notice the editor strikes it out. So I think the idea of enhancing the original is really no-no, don't go there.
No. I don't mean in that sense. It's not that you wantonly enhanced it. Certain things are better expressed in certain languages, in that sense.
That's true. That's true. And that, in that sense, and that's true. And that is a difficulty in translation rather than an opportunity to enhance, I think.
You're being too cautious as a professional. I understand the difficulty. Now,
yes.
Now I'll move on. Okay. Now, you've been translating Ismail Kadre for the last 27 years.
Yes. Not continuously, but every now and then. Yes.
I think there are about 7 novels you translated in the last...
Something like that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Ismail Kadre has a very long literary career. His first novel to be translated into English, which was done from the French, was in, I think, 1974. So he's been around a long time. And when I went to Kosovo, my students, who were teaching me Albanian, they were passionately devoted to Ismail Kadre. They said, if you really want to understand the Albanian language, if you want to understand Albania, read Ismail Kadre. So I did. And that is how I started.
No, I understand the first comment that they made, that if you want to understand Albania... But why Albanian language? Why should you read Ismail Kadre for the sake of language?
Well, because the Albanian language is a very ancient language, mm-hmm. But it is also quite modern in that it has only recently become standardized. Until well into the 20th century, there was a range of different dialects. And there was no recognized literary standard. And this has gradually evolved. And Ismail Kadre has been extremely important in shaping the modern Albanian language. So he is a kind of linguistic standard. And sometimes he experiments with language and sometimes his experiments do not catch on, but he has this role, or has had this role in Albania.
What is the contribution of Ismail Kadre to world literature in your opinion? What is so unique about him?
I think it's fair to say that he's Albania's leading cultural export. that he has made the world aware of Albanian culture, and he has given the country a voice. And also, he has had a very complicated relationship with dictatorship, and most of his writing was done under the communist dictatorship, under conditions of extreme censorship. And his relations with this censorship are very interesting. So he has this tangled relationship with literary repression and freedom, which is also part of what he is.
You made a special mention about the French translator of Ismail Kadri in one of your interviews. Would you please talk about him?
Yusuf Rioni, who is a very, very distinguished translator. And Ismail Kadri first acquired a reputation abroad in France. And his books were translated into French by Yusuf Rioni, who was something of an aristocrat. I think he studied in France before World War II, and he was brought up in a rather privileged family. So for this reason, he had a very hard time under communism. He was suspect. He was a member of what were known as the former elite. So translating Ismail Kadri was something that it was a kind of ticket to freedom for him, I think. But they are very famous translations. They're superb translations, and the first translations into English were done from the French, from Yusuf Rioni. And it was quite difficult to establish the idea that Ismail Kadri should be translated directly from Albanian and not via French.
You were the first person to do that, directly translating from first translator.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is the second time your translation of Kadri's work been longlisted for Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell us about your work experience with Ismail Kadri as a translator.
Well, Ismail Kadri has had many, many translators in many languages. So I wouldn't say that we have a deep personal relationship, but he has always been very, very helpful to me in making small changes to the books and this I valued. He came to England for a week a few years ago and came to some literary festivals where we did some readings and questions and answers, and I accompanied him for a week round England, which was very interesting.
Any special moment you can recollect during the trip, or while translating, or while interacting with him?
Well, he found it. He likes to write in a cafe.
Oh,
and he lives or used to live in Paris, and he liked to write in the famous Café Rostand, which is where so many famous writers hang out. And he was very worried he couldn't find a cafe in London where he could write. They were all too small and noisy.
So he couldn't find any in London.
No. we're not so leisurely as Paris, I think.
Yeah. So now, when you're translating from Albanian to English, which aspect of Albanian language in general do you find most challenging?
I think register. There are, and conversation, there is a peculiar quality to Albanian spoken language, and there are a lot of blessings and curses and very personal ways of communicating, which are quite difficult to translate into English. You and I had a little conversation earlier on about this, about the use of the word sir.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
And yes, you were saying that in India, sir is used towards elders.
Elders, yes, yes.
And I think that's also to some extent true in the United States. But in England, I associate the word really with shops. So there are these shifts in register, which are quite difficult to negotiate.
So when we started these interviews, initially it was very difficult for me not to call sir when a senior.
Yes, I can.
When a senior translator like you.
Yes.
One of the first interviews we have done a year and a half ago, about 18 months ago, is with
Yes.
He was right. Insisting, no. You have to call me Hamid.
on this business of sir, I found a little bit in a dictator course, which actually relates to this. And you asked me if I could read a paragraph from the novel. Well, of course, in communist countries, words like sir or lady and gentleman were forbidden. You became comrade or something like that. And this was true in Albania. And I remember when communism fell in Albania, there was one of the first democratic politicians who stood up in front of a crowd and said, "Ladies and gentlemen." And the crowd fell silent and they started looking at each other. You know, does he mean us? So this is about how lady and gentleman disappeared from Albania.
Okay.
From the language.
Okay, that's nice.
These words were rightly considered significant obstacles in the transition to communism.
Okay.
Each communist country had its own experience of its language, often strange, as in the case of Albania. This little country, generally famous for its failings and backwardness, took an unexpected approach to three words. Whereas the word gentleman disappeared from currency in the very first phase of socialism, like in the Soviet Union, the word lady had a certain staying power. But the nicest surprise turned out to be the word miss. There was a determined effort to replace it, because in Albanian it carried the affectionate connotations of the word mother, especially in primary schools. Despite the annoyance it caused, it was used by tens of thousands of little children instead of the word teacher. Efforts to supplant it failed one after another. The children stubbornly continued to call their teachers Miss. It was this army of countless toddlers that proved indomitable, and the word Miss, with its striking elegance, became permanently enshrined in the Albanian language.
Now, interestingly, even in India, the school teachers are called Miss.
Yes, still, and in England. I don't know that. I mean, even if they're married and I don't know. Anyhow.
In India, whether they're married or not, it doesn't matter.
Yes, exactly. The same here. The same here. It's a strange use of the word.
Now we will come to the book, A Dictator Calls, which is long listed.
Right.
I was wondering, what is the significance of Article A in the title?
A. Well, the book is about a phone call that Stalin made to Boris Pasternak in 1934 about the fate of the poet Osip Mandelstam. And it's about the relationships between dictators and writers. There is Stalin and Pasternak. There is also a telephone call from the Albanian dictator Enver Hoxha, who at one point telephoned Ismail Kadare. And various other dictators come up in the course of the book. There is Nero in Rome and his relations with Seneca. So it looks at the relations between power and creativity from various angles. So it's not just one dictator. It's mainly Stalin, but with relevance to all these other dictators.
So to generalize, in that sense, a dictator.
Yes, 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 yes. So if we live under dictators, we each insert the name, I think.
There are, out of seven, there are other two novels. In fact, one of them got longlisted in 2017, I think. Traitor's Niche.
Yes.
Traitor's Niche. And
that's right.
Three Arch Bridge. In fact, in the few pages that I read from the novel, these names are mentioned too. There was a conversation between the narrator and the editor. Thematically, is there any connection between these three, Traitor's Niche, Three Arch Bridge, and A Dictator Calls?
There is a thematic connection between the Traitor's Niche and the Three Arch Bridge, but it's quite a loose one, and the novels can be read independently. The A Dictator Calls reflects back on them a little bit, but is an entirely separate book, really.
While translating it, which part of the book you spent the maximum time translating it?
A Dictator Calls, it's a very unusual book because it's a novel. It's also an essay. A lot of it is based on history. And it is also almost a kind of inquiry. A historical inquiry. And there are a lot of quotations and references to other books. So as a translator, I had to track these down, and a lot of them were in Russian. And my Russian is not great, but just about good enough to work out what is going on. And he, Ismail Kadare, will, for instance, quote from books which may have been written in English, and he will have read them in Russian translation, and then he will translate them himself into Albanian. So there was a quite a complicated history of what I think is called intertextuality going on in this book. And that was difficult to translate.
So where did you get the help from? From the internet or?
Oh, yes, hours on the net and hours in the British Library, okay. I think is the answer.
Can you read a paragraph from the book in Albanian, John?
Yes, here we are. This is the paragraph in Albanian. It's the same one as I just read in English. Kto tri fjall chuhishin betë drejtë si in the mëthemëlorët në falsën kalimtare. C'est-il l'événement communiste que je te passe und pervoyne vet, disse Herr Professorse, sich ich de rasti ische brüse. Que vende i vogel, i dalur sachunisht bezene, e prappen betje, ne rasti nekture tri fjallewe, kisch de refuhr, di tjersie te paprito. Ndersa fjalle sot ni, isch de stuko en ga tjakulimi, tschüschen de fase de part de sozialismit, a stu sikose de baschkim in sovjetik, fjalle sonje, kisch de be nifa tschindrese. Kurse befassi min Mürtebucher, dort ich kak tonte fjalle etret son jusch. Seven simi, i sei, ich de kakur me kümmen gulje, gatsche ich de mür erarbeite me morphemen nun, sidemos ne schkole filore. Majith nevo sies min tsch kak tonte, gatsche pedore nga vietre mira femi te mitjo, ne vente fjalles mesuelse. Papierkiet peter suven zur kischen de stur njöre pastiertus. Vermiete vegel me kok vor zi, wasch donnen ti chuenin mesurse tatür son jusch. Wer isch de pikerisch kio am mart e parfum me e kalamaiwe, che utregua e parfusch me, che se fiale me hirschi trondize son jusch, suri wend parfum de mischt ne juhen stipe. There it is. That's Albanian with quite a strong English accent.
John, other than the questions that I asked you and the interaction we had, is there something specific that you want to communicate through this podcast, either on translation or about Albanian literature or in general?
I'd just like to reflect on the purpose of being long-listed for a prize and the purpose of prizes in general. Ismail Kadare has won a lot of prizes. He's very well recognized. And I think the purpose of this prize, of prizes for any writer, is really to be read by new readers. And I'm reading Jenny Erpenbeck. So I hope we will not just nod at these writers that come past us in the newspaper, but actually be prompted to read some.
Such a pleasure, John. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome. It's been a real pleasure.
I hope it goes all the way. I wish you the very best.
Thank you. Bye, Adrian.
Right, bye. Thank you.